It's time to wake up. Stay tuned for Free Thought Radio, the only weekly Free Thought Radio broadcast anywhere. A production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation featuring co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Welcome to all you hellbound atheists, agnostics, heathens, infidels, and to everyone else listening today. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The foundation is the nation's largest association of freethinkers. We are atheists and agnostics, and we work to keep state and church separate. Did you happen to notice Dick Cavett's New York Times op-ed piece last week when he quoted Woody Allen on atheism? Dick Cavett wrote, "I guess Woody Allen has, as so often, had the ultimate comic word on the subject." And then he quotes Woody Allen saying, "You cannot prove the non-existence of God. You just have to take it on faith."
And it's nice to hear from Dick Cavett again after all these years. And our guest today, however, doesn't take anything on faith. We are delighted to announce that we'll be talking in a bit with a 16-year-old who has gumption. You may have read the New York Times coverage and the war stories that ran about this New Jersey high school junior who very dramatically exposed the fact that his American history teacher was actually more of a preacher than a teacher. In the next segment, we'll be talking with Matthew LeClaire about exactly what happened to him at his high school class. And this student had the moxie to tape his teacher saying things like, "Only Christians could go to heaven, the rest of us would go to hell." There's been a huge controversy in Kearney, New Jersey, and we'll be learning more about it directly from the student involved.
And by the way, Matthew LeClaire will be honored by the Freedom From Religion Foundation at our 30th annual national convention, which is scheduled here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Concourse Hotel in early October. Matthew will receive the Thomas Jefferson Freethought Award, which is designated for an activist student, and that award includes a $1,000 cash scholarship.
Our show today will also honor Darwin Day. It's the anniversary of Darwin's birthday coming up early next week, and we'll talk about a few other prominent freethinkers who helped change the world.
Well, first, a little news. I wonder if there's another Virgin Mary on the planet.
This is a baby. This is a blessing from God. It is not a political statement. It is not a prop to be used in a debate by people on either side of any issue.
And of course, that was Mary Cheney talking about her pregnancy, and certainly I would agree, and Dan, you would agree with her that a baby isn't a political football. But there's a little bit of hypocrisy involved here in her condemnation of the media questions about her pregnancy as a lesbian, given the fact that the party that she campaigns for, that her father is the vice president, Republican vice president, and this is the party that attacks gay rights, attacks gay marriage, makes it very difficult for lesbian moms to be like Mary Cheney, to have any kind of equality under the law, including, you know, there are a lot of states where her partner wouldn't even have the right to adopt the baby that she's going to have.
And didn't Focus on the Family
denounce, and Focus on the Family immediately denounced her pregnancy, and Focus on the Family is a major promoter of the Republican Party. So who should she be mad at, the media or Focus on the Family?
Well, from the baby's point of view, I mean, a baby is a baby, like she points out. So Focus on the Family really is putting their dogma above real human lives. I remember when I was in Colorado Springs a few years ago, I saw some bumper stickers on some of the cars there, some bumper stickers by some of our free-thinking members in that town. Colorado Springs is where Focus on the Family has its national headquarters. And the bumper sticker says, "Focus on your own damn family." So why don't they do that and leave the rest of us alone? And speaking of Colorado Springs, we now have, in addition to another Virgin Mary, we now have another miracle alert. The breathless news out of Colorado Springs is that Ted Haggard is now, quote, completely heterosexual. Yes, last week, one of the four ministers who's overseeing 3 weeks of what they call intense counseling for the Reverend Ted Haggard, that pastor reported that the disgraced minister emerged convinced that he is completely heterosexual.
And isn't that amazing?
How did they do that? What, did they run a test or something?
I suppose it was prayer.
But how did prayer they test? Did they walk a woman down one side and see if his head turned, or a man down this side to see, you know, well.
Well, I think they're taking it on faith, Dan. Ted Haggard was, of course, forced to resign late last year as president of the National Association of Evangelicals, and he was forced out of the 14,000-member church that he founded when a male prostitute came forward and identified Haggard as a client who had also sometimes used meth with him.
The AP story on this development reported that Ted Haggard is basically being run out of town. Board members from his church have recommended that the family, his family, should move out of town. Not only that, they've strongly urged that Haggard go into secular work.
Well, I hope he won't be joining us.
So what is that? Is that a step down or a step up to go into secular?
Hypocrisy in the church is nothing new, but there is a tragic side to all of this. When churches spread such hate and homophobia that gays and lesbians deny their own nature and live in this unnecessary conflict, you know, that is should be condemned.
Okay, there's one more little tidbit of news here. The University of Chicago released an unsettling survey last week revealing that a disturbing number of doctors don't feel obligated to tell patients about medical options that they oppose on religious grounds, such as abortion and teen birth control, and they also feel they have no duty to refer patients elsewhere for such treatment.
This survey of more than 1,100 MDs is the first major look at how physicians' religious or moral beliefs might affect patient care. They found that 58% of doctors say they carry their religious beliefs into their daily work. 63% believe it's ethical for doctors to explain moral objections to their patients. 86% of doctors do say they feel obligated to tell patients about all medically available procedures. 71% said they would refer patients to another doctor if they had a moral objection, but that leaves a lot of physicians out there who are not doing the right thing. 52% of physicians said they oppose abortion. That's a lot. 42% oppose prescribing birth control pills to 14 to 16-year-olds without parental approval. And doctors describing themselves as very religious were much less likely to feel obligated to tell patients about treatments with which they disagree, such as the morning after pill for rape victims.
That study was published this week in the New England Journal of Medicine.
So choose your doctors carefully. And finally, we'd like to talk a little bit more about very appreciated support that we feel at the Freedom From Religion Foundation that we're receiving in our case before the U.S. Supreme Court, which will be heard oral arguments at the end of this month. Our right as taxpayers, and that's literally Dan and I are the co-plaintiffs along with Ann Gaylor as taxpayers, to sue over the creation of the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives at the White House and at the Cabinet has been challenged by the Bush administration. They've stopped our lawsuit, in other words, and asked the Supreme Court to decide whether we have the right to sue. And that will be, of course, argued at the end of this month on February 28th. And it's a much-watched case. It's actually one of the more interesting cases that has been accepted by the Supreme Court this term. So we now have complete news this week on who has filed Friend of the Court briefs on our behalf. A very strong brief was filed jointly by the ACLU with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And that brief was joined by the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Freedom, People for the American Way Foundation, and the Anti-Defamation League. Briefs were also filed on our behalf by the Center for Free Inquiry, the American Jewish Committee, which is part of the American Jewish Congress, and American Atheists. And also, I'm very pleased to say that a bunch of legal historians and law scholars on their own assembled a brief. They don't represent a group per se, but they represent a lot of big names in law. And these include Chemerinsky, I need to say that right, Ronald B. Flowers, Nadine Strasser, you'd recognize that name as with the ACLU, Edwin S. Gostad, and many, many others.
We have a
very
book.
Grateful for that.
We have a book, don't we, that Gostad
yes,
wrote on.
Yes, these are our very major scholars. And I thought maybe, Dan, you could say something about some of the briefs, what hit you about the ACLU-AU.
I got to meet the ACLU and Americans United attorneys who worked on their amicus brief for us last week in D.C., and they concentrated on reaffirming the FLAST decision. The FLAST decision is the precedent that all cases since it was in the late 50s, wasn't it? The FLAST decision, which carves out
late 60s,
was it? Okay.
FLAST versus Cohen.
FLAST versus Cohen, which the Supreme Court has admitted carves out a special exemption for the Establishment Clause, so that taxpayers do have the right, do have the standing to challenge the government on Establishment Clause violations.
When it violates the separation of church and state.
Church and state, yeah, the Establishment Clause. So the U.S. government, in petitioning the court to overturn our lawsuit, wants to weaken FLAST. And so the ACLU-AU brief did a great job of reaffirming and strengthening the principles and showing that the government's arguments about how FLAST was applied by the court are totally wrong. Some of the other briefs, the historian's brief is just a wonderful read all by itself. It shows the problems that the English monarchy had when they united church and state and why our founders left that and separated the state and church. And the U.S. government in this case of ours is trying to argue the opposite of what our founders actually believed and practiced. The government is saying that we don't have standing to sue because the money was spent internally. There was no external flow of money outside
of
the government.
They didn't give funding to a religious group per se.
Yeah, we're challenging the formation of the White House.
The
offices
and staff,
right?
And the conferences.
And the government is saying this is just internal regulation. You know, we don't have a right to challenge what they do. But these historians show that, of course, this is exactly the opposite of what our founders were thinking. They wanted to make sure that all of us at all levels have the right to challenge a violation of the First Amendment on religious grounds.
Well, and as Thomas Jefferson said, he felt it was sinful and tyrannical to force a citizen to be compelled to force a ministry against their conscience. I mean, that's just sort of basic to the founding of our country, that the government does not establish religion, which we feel is what's happening with the White House conferences and the White House office. So if anybody wants the details on any of these briefs, you can read all of the documents. You can read the Friend of the Court briefs, our brief at our website at www.ffrf.org. And there's links all over the place to the Supreme Court case that will be heard this month. So we'll be right back to talk with the gutsy 16-year-old high school junior who has protested really egregious proselytizing by a history teacher at his New Jersey public school.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling down.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, www.ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by co-hosts Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with my co-host Dan Barker, and we've got Matthew LeClaire on the line with us from Kearney, New Jersey. He's a 16-year-old junior whose American history teacher has acted more like a preacher than a teacher. And Matthew's actions to protest this have made headlines across the country.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Matt. So do you have your homework done for the day?
Well, actually, I ended up not going to school today. I'm feeling a little bit sick, so stayed home.
Oh, well, then it might help you to know that we will not be praying for you.
Can you take us back to the beginning of the semester? I think it was in September when you started your junior class. Is this an honors class you're taking?
Yeah, it's AP.
And this is American history?
Yes.
And what's the name of your teacher?
Mr. Peskevich.
And so what happened?
Well, basically the first day I had him, we started to talk, the whole class, and it started to turn into almost like a religion class. Mostly it was more about September 11th, and he got into the Muslims and started to talk about that, started to talk about a little bit about his politics, but mostly his religion, and the same thing happened on the second day. And so on the third day, I decided to start recording the class because I wasn't really sure how bad it was going to get, and it sounded like it could get ugly.
What did he say anything really ugly the first couple of days?
That you mean something that wouldn't be on the recording?
Yeah.
That I wouldn't remember exactly. It was a long time ago, but I do remember there were a few things. But the first 2 days were mostly his politics, talking about what a wonderful President George Bush is, and, mostly things along that line. But there were some things that he would talk about, the Muslims and, just toleration and that kind of thing. But the way that he would say it, it sounded almost as if it could get worse, and indeed it definitely did.
Well, you had some prescience there, or power of prophecy, because he got very blatant in his proselytizing.
Well, let me guess. He's not a Muslim, is he?
No. I believe he's a Baptist. He's a Baptist preacher.
Isn't he a Sunday school teacher or something?
Yes, actually, in the town.
So he's having a trouble distinguishing from his Sunday school class and his public school classes.
Yeah, I think he may have known exactly what he was doing, but I'm not really sure.
So tell us what you got on the recordings.
Basically everything you can imagine that could be said. As an example, one of the things he said was that if you reject the Lord's salvation, you belong in hell. He said that there were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark.
Now, this is what I read that in the New York Times, but
yeah.
I had trouble believing it.
Me too, and which is another reason why I had it recorded. I mean, who would actually believe that this kind of thing happened? And the plan, at least for me, was, let's see if it starts to die down. If it dies down, don't bother with it. And if it continues, then report it to the principal. And that's basically what I did, but it wasn't dealt with in any way by the principal when it was given to the superintendent and the board attorney and the board. We let it go for about a month from October 10th. We kind of, saw if they were going to do anything, and we were basically ignored for a long time, which is why it came out in the media.
Who's we? You and your family?
Yes.
You and your friends, maybe?
And your father is an attorney, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
So that was helpful. So did you actually turn over the tapes to the board, or did you just give them transcriptions?
Well, what happened was I requested a meeting for October 10th, and after a few canceled appointments, it did occur on October 10th, and the meeting had me, Mr. Peskevich, the teacher, the principal, and the department head of history. And in that meeting, it was basically just me and Mr. Peskevich talking back and forth, and Mr. Peskevich denied making most of the statements that he made, including the one where he said, if you reject the Lord's salvation, you belong in hell. He said he would never say that even in his own church.
So did you produce the tape then?
that was at the end. It was about an hour-long meeting. And finally, after he denied so many statements, I produced and I told them, the classes were recorded. And Mr. Peskevich said, "Well, maybe I shouldn't say anything without an attorney." And that was good advice until he went further and said to me, "Well, maybe you're an atheist. You got the big fish. You got the big Christian guy who's a teacher." And that to me, that was obviously some kind of personal attack.
Are you still in that class?
I was until actually this Monday. We finished the semester, and usually for level one classes, the students stay in that class. But when I got my schedule, I found that I had a new teacher. And it wasn't just me, it was the entire class. Every single person that was in that class was taken out, put into another room, and given another teacher. And this was done by request of Mr. Baskevich. And apparently it was dealt with immediately, and they followed his request.
So, Matthew, can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
Do you know what your grade is?
for the semester?
Yeah.
It'll be a B. Yep.
Well, at least he didn't flunk you.
Well,
maybe
yeah,
that would be too obvious.
Yeah, I think he was pretty careful not to do that. But at the same time, you know, we're still waiting for something to be done. I mean, you know, the entire classes were changed by his request, and now a lot of the students are angry because they blame me for it.
Now, there's been reprisal against you, according to the newspaper accounts.
Yeah,
you've lost friends?
Oh yes.
So
yeah, a lot.
Can you talk about that?
Sure, a little bit. I mean, it's just a lot of these kids that are angry with me now, I've known since kindergarten, first grade. You know, we've been friends for a long time, and when this happened, they basically just used all kinds of bad language and, you know, just got angry with me, and we're not friends anymore. And I try not to hold it against them because they could change. They're upset right now, and maybe over time they'll think about it. But
well, why are they upset with you? Why aren't they upset with their crazy teacher?
It's, you know what? I honestly think it's because it could be because they agree with some of the things that he said, but I don't think that's the real reason. I think it's because the teacher seems like a really nice guy until you start listening to what he was saying. I mean, he has a way to connect with the students, and he's very good at making friends, and I think that no matter what he does, the students will stand by him because they think he's cool.
I would think that when a student would hear somebody coming out of the words of their mouth that dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark, that their jaws would be dropping open. I mean, were you the only student in any of his classes that, you know, was shocked?
Well, it's interesting because before anybody knew that the classes were being recorded, I had talked to a few students after class, and we talked a little bit about it, and, you know, some of the students would say, yeah, sometimes he goes a little bit too far, a little bit out of line, but they wouldn't say anything. And then when they found out that I had recorded the class, I turn on the TV, I see a reporter interviewing one of the students, and these same students that told me sometimes he went out of line are now saying, oh, he never tried to push his beliefs on anyone. And these students are the ones that were in the class with me, and it's just, it's really amazing.
It's lucky you've got those recordings, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really amazing to me to watch just how the students will react to the situation, because I always figured that when they hear something like that, I mean, when they hear what he would say, that it, you know, if they don't agree with him, that they belong in hell. And when he said that evolutionary theory was not true and that the Big Bang theory was not true. You know, there's so many things, and what I've told you is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you can go online and listen to these recordings, and it's phenomenal what was said, but I don't understand fully why so many students will go to any length to protect the teacher, even to go so far as to, tell people that I made up the recordings, I twisted his words around, I made Mr. Baskevich say those things. They'll go to any lengths, even if it's just not true.
Well, isn't this just the old deference for authority? I mean, here's a figure of authority, and the students want a good grade, and they want to be liked by the person in authority. It happens in churches. It happens in governments. You think maybe this is what's happening here?
It could be. I mean, I just, again, I'm extremely surprised. I was when this came out of the students' reaction. I mean, I can understand that they may think he's cool for whatever reason. You know, he seems to be a nice guy, but there's something deeper than that. You know, so telling the students that they belong in hell is not exactly the nicest thing to do.
Not exactly a friendly remark.
Well, for some of us, it would be a compliment, you know. So
all
the great people are going to be in hell, all the great thinkers. We have to take a break here, Matthew, so can you hold on after the break?
Sure.
We'll come back and talk some more about this.
Beware of dogma. It has a bite. Beware of dogma. It wants a fight. Beware of dogma. It will ignite a holy war by itself. Beware of dogma. It'll trap your mind. Religious dogma. It'll make you blind.
Beware of dogma.
It's not designed to let you think for yourself.
You're listening to Free Thought Radio, the only weekly Free Thought Radio broadcast anywhere, co-hosted by Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor, and produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. www.ffrf.org.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And we're talking with 16-year-old high school junior Matthew LeClaire about religion run amok last fall in his high school American history class. Matthew, your story sounds very much like others that we've heard over the years. Mary Durkee, when she refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and the girl in Milwaukee, and the Jaeger family, remember, when he refused to stand for the religion?
In Alabama. But this happening in New Jersey seems really shocking. Do you feel like the whole school is arrayed against you, or do you have some support?
I have a little bit of support from some students. Not a lot, but a few. Some students also disagree with me, but they're willing to stick by me just because they know of the kind of problems that I've been getting from other students. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, it's just been a lot of bad remarks made by a lot of students.
Are you getting hate mail or emails or phone calls?
I have gotten some hate mail. I also received one death threat a little while ago from a student.
From a student? Did they investigate it?
I brought it to the school's attention, but they told me there's nothing they can do about it. I gave them the student's name. I had multiple pictures. I gave them everything they need to find out who was and talk to them, but they basically didn't do anything. So we went to the police, and the police took care of the situation.
Well, that's good.
And later on, the school did do something, but that was only by request of the police.
Is Kearney, the community of Kearney, very conservative, generally?
Not really.
So this is really kind of disturbing.
Very odd town, I know. I would never call it a conservative town. It never seemed like it. You know, I've lived here all my life, and I've done a lot of things in the school system. I went to a lot of meetings. My mother was on the PTA. She always went to the beautification meetings. It's not like we're a family that not many people know. I mean, you know, a lot of these people, including adults, we've known for such a long time. So it's really amazing what the reaction of the town.
I was going to ask if you could say a little bit more about what your teacher had said specifically about a Muslim girl. I understand that he singled somebody out.
Yes, this girl was not in the class, but she was. She's in the school, and I know her personally. A lot of people know her personally, and he knew her. And you know, he said that she was a nice girl and everything, but sadly, she was going to hell too.
And he said this in the classroom in front of all the kids.
In the classroom, yes. He did later apologize for that one statement in the meeting on October 10th, and that was the one and only thing he did apologize for. Basically, everything else he denied ever saying.
Well, I was going to ask if you could talk about this latest, as far as I know, the latest development, which I thought was rather shocking, which was the action of the school board. Can you tell our listeners what the school board did?
Where do I start? I guess the most recent thing would be that they banned students from recording their classes.
Well, that'll take care of the problem.
Exactly. What a way to deal with the situation, you know. And to me, that gives me the feeling that they do not want to know what's going on in their school.
Well, that's anti-educational. You should want to record the classes for instruction.
Well, of course. You know, and they claim it's a student issue, student privacy, but it's in a classroom of 25 other students and a teacher. And there's a larger issue here, and I don't think that the board really understands it. It's really amazing how they've seen that, you know, banning students from recording is going to prevent you know, anything being done. To me, that shows that they...
just want to cover it up.
They want to cover it up, yeah. And that's how it's been since the beginning of this. The board attorney, on the day that I actually was on Anderson Cooper, the board attorney said that corrections and apologies would only reopen the issue.
That's a national talk show you were on?
Yes.
A TV show.
On CNN.
Now, didn't the board actually take some action against the teacher as well?
Not to our knowledge.
They didn't tell him to stop talking about religion, for example?
My guess is that they probably said stop, but...
but not publicly?
No, and there's been no corrections made.
And he's still teaching classes?
Yes, he's still teaching classes.
He should be fired. He's a renegade teacher who's breaking the law, knowingly violating the Constitution. He's inept as a teacher in that regards.
Well, what's also interesting is that his statements about his idea on science, they were terrible very, very recently. As a matter of fact, I think it was two Wednesdays ago, Mr. Baskevich, in open class with me sitting there, compared Hitler propagandists to the scientists that say there's global warming.
Hmm.
And this is way after all this stuff has been occurring. And it's truly amazing that he's saying that in front of me, and I can't even begin to imagine what he's saying in the other classes. It seems as if the board, the superintendent, the board attorney, still doesn't really want to deal with the situation. They just want to continue to cover it up and try to change it. And just as a little update for you, it's extremely recent. The teacher, Mr. Baskevich, came out with a letter in our local paper, in the Observer, saying that he did not lie in the meeting on October 10th. And so, you know, it keeps going, and it's definitely going to be a developing story.
So your family, is it sort of in negotiating with the school district? Has there actually been legal action taken?
As of right now, we've talked to them. We've tried to deal with the situation. We've tried to negotiate with them, but... there was really no real result. They still won't really talk to us. And even during our negotiations, that's when they decided that they would pass the rule that says students can no longer record their classes. And so I don't know what our next step is going to be, but we're going to see.
Well, the school obviously knows that they are legally vulnerable here. Their legal counsel must be advising them, you better be careful.
Well, as far as what I've seen of the board attorney, I'm not sure how much he knows. It appears as if he's definitely not doing a very good job advising any of the clients, anybody on the board. And it seems to me as if it's definitely going to get ugly and probably very soon.
Is your dad able to take a case like this?
Well, he's medical malpractice, so he doesn't. But we do have advisors. We do have different lawyers, law firms that we're talking to, and it's definitely in the working. But we'll probably see soon.
Well, I am stunned to hear all the details. It's just hard to believe that this could be happening in a public school in the 21st century,
10 miles from New York.
Yes, and that it would. I mean, what if you hadn't been in that class, and what if you hadn't had the foresight to tape your teacher? He'd still be doing this.
That's right, and. He even said in that meeting that I keep talking about on October 10th, he said that he hasn't been doing anything differently than he has for the past 14 years he's been teaching.
Oh, dear.
And so this is, according to him, been going on ever since he started teaching, and no student has ever really come out and done anything about it.
So, Matthew, has this kind of ruined your school year, or do you feel like you're just sort of ready to fight?
Well, it's definitely a cause that I feel that I needed to take up. If I didn't do anything about it, I'd probably feel worse than I do now. And it's something that somebody has to do, and it's part of America, it's part of democracy, and people actually have to do something when they see something going wrong. You know, it's not just about calling yourself American and having a flag outside your window. It's about actually taking part in the country and the democracy, and I'm hoping that possibly this story will open a lot of people's eyes.
Oh, I hope so. And there's a great deal of support for you. We've heard from so many people around the country who've read the New York Times, seen the stories, and have been appalled.
Yeah.
And
well, you're a hero. You know,
yes.
You're standing up. You're taking a brave stance in a rough time.
And that's a hard thing to do in a high school, which is so conforming. So we really appreciate you taking the time to be on our show today.
And we'll see you at our convention.
Yes.
In October.
Yes.
To receive the award. So that'll be nice to meet you there.
Thank you. I would love to meet you guys.
And we'll follow your case, and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. I'm here with Dan Barker, and we've been speaking with Matthew LeClaire, who will also be speaking next fall at FFRF's 30th Annual National Convention in Madison to receive a Thomas Jefferson Student Activist Award. Stay tuned. There's more Free Thought Radio in a moment.
I don't need Jesus to give me a smile. I don't need a holy book to make my life worthwhile. Just give me does not come from above.
I'm Dan Barker, and I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And now it's time for this week's Freethinkers Almanac. We'll be honoring Charles Darwin and some others. When you celebrate Valentine's Day, think of Frederick Douglass. He was born a slave in either 1817 or 1818, and he chose February the 14th for his birth date. Frederick Bailey renamed himself Frederick Douglass after escaping slavery in Maryland at age 20. Douglass traveled widely, often at personal peril, to lecture against slavery. In 1847, he moved to Rochester, New York, began publishing a weekly newspaper called the North Star. He was the only man to speak in favor of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's controversial plank of woman suffrage at the first women's rights convention in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848. In 1870, Douglass launched the New National Era out of Washington, D.C. He was nominated for vice president by the Equal Rights Party to run with Victoria Woodhull as presidential candidate in 1872. His District of Columbia home is a National Historic Site. In one of his autobiographies, Douglass famously observed, "I prayed for 20 years, but received no answer until I prayed with my legs."
Galileo Galilei, Jeremy Bentham, and Susan B. Anthony all share the same birthday, not the year. Of February 15th, and what a lineup. Galileo, born in 1564, pioneered the experimental scientific method. His Copernican views were investigated and condemned by the church. The Holy Office banned his book, describing impetus, momentum, and gravity, summoning the frail scientist to Rome for trial. Galileo was ordered to abjure his theory and was condemned to house arrest for the rest of his life. 350 years after his death, the Catholic Church forgave Galileo.
Also born on February the 15th, in 1748, was Jeremy Bentham, the great philosopher, utilitarian, humanitarian, and atheist. Bentham's groundbreaking utilitarian work called Introduction to the Principles of Morals and Legislation propounded his principle of, quote, the greatest happiness of the greatest number. He worked for political, legal, prison, and educational reform. The renowned humanitarian extensively critiqued religion. He critiqued the catechism, the use of religious oaths, and the Bible. Jeremy Bentham wrote, "No power of government ought to be employed in the endeavor to establish any system or article of belief on the subject of religion."
Also born on February 15th in the year 1820 was Susan B. Anthony, who became a lifelong feminist collaborator with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and spent 30 years campaigning for women's suffrage. Raised Quaker, Susan became a Unitarian, but at the end of her life was an agnostic, according to Stanton, who wrote, "Every energy of her soul is centered upon the needs of this world. To her, work is worship." Susan's professed creed was that of the perfect equality of women. She confessed, "While I do not consider it my duty to tear to tatters the lingering skeletons of the old superstitions and bigotries, yet I rejoice to see them crumbling on every side." Celebrating Aunt Susan's birthday became an annual feminist tradition starting with her 50th birthday and is still celebrated today. Anthony advised, "Cautious, careful people, always casting about to preserve their reputation and social standing, never can bring about a reform. Those who are really in earnest must be willing to be anything or nothing in the world's estimation and publicly and privately, in season and out, avow their sympathy with despised and persecuted ideas and their advocates and bear the consequences." And finally, did you know Charles Darwin and Abraham Lincoln were both born on February 12th, 1809? Both were unorthodox, but today we want to talk about that monumental thinker Charles Darwin, who has done so much to advance human knowledge. Dan and I had the great pleasure of making a pilgrimage to Down House, Darwin's home in the outskirts of London.
It was almost a religious experience.
Almost, yeah. Several years ago. It was a very moving experience. We got to learn so much about him, see where he lived. Darwin was ill much of his life, but he was a very gentle and loving husband, father, and employee, and his methodical research underpins our biology today.
Darwin prepared for the church at Cambridge, but his passion was natural history. During his work as a naturalist for the voyage on the Beagle, he began documenting and formulating his theory of evolution. At the time he wrote the monumental book on the origin of species in 1859, which he delayed publishing, fearing correctly that the religious hysteria would follow it, Darwin still accepted the first cause argument. Gradually, though, Darwin threw off his religious beliefs. In 1871, in The Descent of Man, Darwin wrote, "For my part, I would as soon be descended from a baboon as from a savage who delights to torture his enemies, treats his wives like slaves, and is haunted by the grossest superstitions." He wrote to the Reverend J. Fordyce on July 7, 1879, that "an agnostic would be the most correct description of my state of mind." Darwin called the Christian scheme of salvation, which would doom his father, brother, and most of his best friends to everlasting punishment, a damnable doctrine. Darwin's memoirs were published posthumously in 1887 by his family under the title Life and Letters of Charles Darwin, with his hardest-hitting views on religion excised. Only in 1958 did Darwin's granddaughter, Nora Barlow, publish his autobiography with the original omissions restored. Darwin died in 1882. When you think about that he's been dead for more than a century, yet here in the United States, we keep refighting the Scopes trial every generation. Well, that's rather discouraging. What would Darwin think? I'm Dan Barker with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. This show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. And we want to thank our engineer today, Owen Murphy. It's his first time engineering our show. And you may have heard his name. He's with the Heller and Murphy ESPN sports radio show in Madison. Did I get that right? On 1070. Oh, okay. All of you sports fans will know his name. He's here at Madison's Progressive Talk, the Mic 92.1 in Madison, Wisconsin. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper from the Studio Audio for the Arts. You can hear the show at ffrf.org, where past shows are archived and podcast. Please call the Progressive Hotline at, do we have that number?
608? Do we have that number, Owen? We'll have to look it up at the website. Sorry, we forgot to put that in.
It's a blank place on my 26318? No, never mind. You'll know what it is. But if you'd like your question or comment to be broadcast on a future Free Thought Radio show, you can call that number.
And thanks to our young activist today, Matthew LeClaire, and to you for listening to Free Thought Radio. Remember, our show will now be broadcast from 1 to 2 p.m. every Saturday afternoon. And a final word, we want to take a moment to honor Molly Ivins, who died last week, and the world cannot afford to lose Molly Ivins, and the rest of us are just going to have to redouble our activism to make up for it. Molly ended her last column, Stand Up Against the Surge, published last November, by saying, "We are the people who run this country. We are the deciders. We need people in the streets banging pots and pans and demanding, stop it now." So in Molly's honor, we'll end this show by literally banging some pots and pans, and maybe this is the first time this has ever been done on the radio. We hope it's not too loud, and we'll see you in the streets.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, www.ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by co-hosts Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.